You're listening to the Dana and Parks podcast on KMBZ.
I'm going to be honest. I'm going to have to make another trip to Washington, D.C. I did not know that this place existed.
Yeah.
I'm reading the story in the New York Times, and it is fascinating. The International Spy Museum.
Yeah, so for years, more than 10,000 items in the International Spy Museum's collection were actually stored off-site. That changed this summer, and now all of those items are in a new vault in the International Spy Museum in Washington, D.C. And when I read this in the New York Times, I called them up today, and I spoke with Eliza, the director of media relations there, and I said, you guys got to call in and tell us what you have in that vault. We are obsessed with even some of the photos they have of the disguises and the cameras that have really been used in spy operations.
Eliza Brand joining us from the International Spy Museum in Washington, D.C. Eliza, welcome.
Thanks for having me, you all.
Whose idea was this? We didn't even know there was a spy museum. And how is it that there's so many tools of the trade that came into your possession?
Sure. Yeah, we were born on a beautiful night in 2002, which now is quite a while back. It was basically the brainchild of our founder, Milton Maltz, who had done some time for the Korean War, got pulled into the NSA. And when he was working over there, he was so impressed by all the code breaking that was going on. He thought to himself, people would want to know about this. Americans would be fascinated. And he went on to make his money and work in business and create a whole radio station conglomerate, if you will, and came back to that idea now that he had a bit of time and said, why don't we make this happen? The Spy Museum. It could be something really special and it could teach people what's going on behind the scenes.
Give us some idea, even some of the World War II era artifacts that you have that really show what spy craft looked like and how it evolved over the decades.
There's so much. And truly, I should say, we start way before then. So World War II is really when things start to become a bit more official. So the OSS is created, which is really the precursor to the CIA. The same is sort of happening in Europe at that time. And so things become more kind of professionalized, if you will. But one of our best artifacts, I think, and I know I'm a history nerd, so, you know, you can love all of them, but I think this is a real treat. It's a special letter written by George Washington in 1777, and it sets up the first spy network in this country. At the time, I guess, not even in this country, in the colonies. And that intelligence network is what really helped the American people win the revolution and create the country we know today.
So he being George, President Washington, future President Washington, wasn't the president in 1777, but he would go on, or these people that were part of this original spy network, I'm assuming would infiltrate somehow, some way, the British army and then report back to the colonial army?
Yeah, so they found it was kind of difficult to get military folks in and out and get the information that they needed. And they kind of saw a need to have a quieter approach, if you will. So
a more subtle approach.
More subtle, yes. So George Washington put together this letter, chose a man, Sackett, to lead this network. He did it for, quite frankly, a small fee. I would have expected it to be more, but it was $50 a month out of his own pocket.
Wow.
Yeah, you'd think it would be more expensive, but I guess you don't know what quality you're getting, right?
Right. Listen to this, Scott. The Spy Museum has also received gifts and loans from international governments. The South Korean government, for example, lent items said to have been seized from a North Korean spy who crossed into the South. Among these is a pen that, when clicked a certain way, would have been capable of injecting a paralyzing agent into its unsuspecting victim. This is stuff out of the spy movies.
Yes, and a lot of the spy movies are inspired by the reality. I think sometimes the reality is a bit more absurd and crazy than the fiction of it all.
By the way, I had never heard of this guy, and I too am a big history buff. Nathaniel Sackett was the original American spy master.
Yes, and he wasn't very good, I should say. He did set it up, But I think he was only working it for about 6 months before he got fired. He did a terrible job. And then they put in Benjamin Talmadge. And that truly is the name that if anyone has seen Turn, the television show, he really is the head of the Culper Spy Ring, which did all of the hard work that made the intelligence happened on that side.
Well, Sackett must have been terrible. After the war, it says here he applied for a job with the federal government, and George Washington basically told him to get lost.
Oh my goodness! Yeah, so that makes sense. That's funny, but that makes sense.
So, listen to this, Scott. There, one of your colleagues, Eliza, is quoted as saying there are some challenging elements to housing this collection because so much of it was meant to kill people, or destroy, or distract. We have powders that were meant to be tipped into gas tanks that could essentially erode the gas tank quickly so you could disable somebody's vehicle. What are some of the other more, I don't want to say dangerous items? I'm sure you don't have like Ebola in there, but you probably do have to be very careful with some of this stuff.
We do. We have a bit of a unique challenge in that a lot of these items are maybe used for dangerous activities. So we do need to make sure that poisons are not still present. Sometimes we run into that.
Have you run into that? Seriously?
We have. It wasn't, we didn't open it and release the poison, but we had folks check it out. Again, we do heavy, heavy due diligence when things come through. We do a lot of research. We work with a lot of experts and professionals. So it didn't go anywhere, but we checked it, and it looks like it may in fact be poison. And then we dealt with it accordingly.
If somebody is listening to this show right now and they're thinking, hey, we're going to Washington in a couple of weeks or a couple of months, and they want to swing by the museum, what's the one thing you would say, you've got to see this? It is the most incredible, bizarre, weird, interesting item in the museum that is available to the public?
Sure. I would say there's so many directions I could go with that, but I would say the ice axe we have. It's a one-of-a-kind item. It's a bit gory, so it depends. You'd want to make sure the kids are old enough that this isn't too gruesome, I suppose. But we have the ice axe that was used to kill Leon Trotsky. It was really a murder of the century. And you still can see the rusted, bloody fingerprint on top of it. It's absolutely nuts.
What is the word you're using? Ice axe?
Ice axe.
Oh, ice yes. Axe. Okay, got it.
An ice pick, if you will.
All right. I'm also seeing here that there are so many items that are really two things. The purse actually conceals a camera, a pen conceals a micro dot viewer, and a shoe has a knife in it. You have a shoe that has a knife in it?
We certainly do. We probably have more than one. We have a spatula with a knife in it. I can tell you, you could put a knife so many places. These are things I did not know about until this job.
Where are you located in D.C.?
We're in L'Enfant Plaza. So we opened in a totally new building in 2019, and it's massive. We've expanded our collection. We tripled the artifacts that we have in our collection. So it's a real fun time. It's also, we're located about a block and a half from the National Mall and about a block and a half from the wharf, which is a gorgeous space where you can see the water.
So when you watch like a James Bond movie and you see a car that the headlights flip open and there's a machine gun there, or he's got this watch that can do horribly complicated things, does it make you laugh, or you're like, oh, we've got one of those?
Well, it depends. There are certain things we do have. I'd say we have many watches. A lot are cameras or listening devices.
Yeah.
But I think it's hard not to enjoy the pop culture of it all. I know that that's how a lot of our audience comes to us, and that's the knowledge that they bring, correct or not, right? So we have such a blast talking about what things are realistic and what are not.
Eliza, tell Scott about the British spies that used a mini motorcycle that could unfold in seconds after parachuting behind German lines during World War II.
Oh, the Well bike. Of course. It's so cute. It would actually come in a little canister, which is cool, and open up. I have to say, you're probably best off if you have short legs, but, you know, when in doubt, You just need something that works. But it looks like a teeny, teeny, tiny motorcycle, and it will just get you where you need to go.
That is crazy.
The next time I'm in D.C., I'm going to swing by. I can't wait to see the museum.
Oh, you have to. It's a blast. It's fun.
All right. Eliza Brand with the International Spy Museum in Washington. Thank you for your time. Really enjoyed it.
Thanks for having me.
All right. You take care. 913-586.
A motorcycle that comes out of a little can?
913-586-7798 here on Dana and Parks. So here's an update on a story that we brought you a couple of weeks ago here on the show. It's about the social media challenge, the door kick.
Yeah. Or and, you're going to be shot is another word for the challenge.
Yeah, that's probably pretty fair. Police are once again sounding the alarm to cut it out. This is not funny. It is dumb.
Scott, someone is going to be shot and killed. And if you missed the headline a couple weeks ago, the Ring doorbell cameras are catching this all over. Mm-hmm. One case was in Florida. They've been in Oklahoma. You've seen them in Nevada. These kids dare each other to run up to a stranger's door and try to kick the door in. And now they're escalating the challenge. And in one case a couple days ago, the kids are armed with like fake
guns?
Nerf guns.
So here's this story from Louisville. Police are again warning families about a troubling social media challenge. The trend, which is called the Door Kick Challenge, is being reported all across the country. Groups of kids go up to doors in the middle of the night, violently kicking the door and then taking off. A Louisville woman ended up with a video from a Ring camera at her front door. The footage, which was captured on Saturday at 2:30 in the morning, shows teenagers with their faces covered.
Oh, yeah. They look like they're there to rob you.
Approaching the front and side doors of the home. The homeowner caught the teenagers outside another neighbor's home a few minutes later, screaming at them to go away. I would not even go outside.
What is the goal? Just to freak out the homeowner?
To be an idiot.
The Louisville Metro Police Department said the challenge is a crime. And anyone caught doing it will be arrested and charged. Quoting here from a spokesperson for the Louisville Police Department, anyone participating in this type of behavior is certainly risking their life. A resident could easily assume that resorting to deadly force against the person on the other side of the door is the only way to protect themselves from what they believe to be an intruder.
I mean, we've talked about kids having guns pulled on them playing the senior assassins game, and they're not even doing anything other than hiding behind a bush.
I am so glad. And if they're listening this afternoon, thank you, kids, that my children are now grown-ups. And somehow, no pun intended, I dodged that bullet. And so did you.
I sometimes think the internet has made us so dumb.
So smart and yet so dumb.
I don't want to say we deserve what comes our way. This is example A.
Yeah.
That, and it's police departments around the country. This is not just something happened on the East Coast or on the West Coast. I feel so bad for the homeowner that is going to have to make that decision in one split second and will never be charged, but will then have it on their conscience for the rest of their life that they've killed a kid.
Oh, no, they'll be charged.
They will be charged because the person has not accessed the home yet.
They're also fleeing.
By kicking in the door, Scott?
The door has not been kicked in. If you shoot through that door, you
well,
as
yes,
the homeowner
if they shoot
are committing
through a door. But you don't think when you answer, let's say you go to the door and you open that door and there are four people, you don't know that they're kids, wearing masks and, quote, fake guns in their hands, which you don't know in the middle of the night are fake, there's not a jury in the world that's going to convict you for shooting.
I hope you're right. But I pray to God that some kid doesn't end up getting killed. Listen,
you certainly would get
killed. I cannot believe it hasn't happened yet. I cannot believe it hasn't happened yet.
We live in a time where I would hope that if some buddy of my kid, you know, let's say I've got a 16-year-old boy, and I don't. Sometimes I thank God for that. And the buddy says, hey, you want to do this door knock challenge or door kick challenge, whatever it's called. that they would have the wherewithal to say, that is a really bad idea. That's how we end up getting shot. Somebody is going, if this trend continues, somebody is going to die.
You understand the trend isn't let's do it to scare the homeowner. It's a dare. You're daring your buddy to go up and kick on somebody's door. It's a dare.
And you have to get it on video. It's all about the video.
Yeah, because you got to get clicks on your Insta.
Very quickly out of Shawnee, Shawnee police are currently looking for a man accused of stabbing another man inside a local business in the 10,900 block of West 75th Street. They were called there to, it's a barbecue restaurant, on reports of a physical disturbance around 1:30 p.m., 75th and Neiman.
I was going to say, we got to help me out there. 75th and
Neiman. Mm-hmm.
This is right in between Schweitzer and Neiman, but closer to Neiman.
The man allegedly stabbed another man inside the business. The victim was taken to an area hospital, and they are now stable. The suspect ran south from the scene. White man, long black hair, dark black clothing, and according to the picture, a very big beard.
So just so we're aware where we are talking here, there's a Hayward's barbecue over there. There's a Seafood Island. There's a Walmart just north of there.
It was at Hayward's barbecue.
It was at Hayward's. Yeah. Okay. And then behind that is a highly, highly residential area. And then it gets into some more, like as you get south, there are some businesses, but it's wooded.
But
it's,
yeah.
It's wooded over there.
Dressed in all black, big long beard, long hair.
Good Lord.
Is there a reason for the stabbing?
They are still looking for the suspect. They do not know.
Was there a do we know if there was a fight?
Look at the woods just south.
Oh, yeah. I'm relatively familiar with the area.
All the detail I just provided is all the detail
that
they
have. All right. attorneys for Sean Diddy Combs late yesterday filed a motion asking that his conviction earlier this month be thrown out, or barring that he be given a new trial. The 62-page motion, which was filed in New York, argues in part that the Mann Act, M-A-N-N, Mann Act, the law under which Combs was convicted on July 2nd on two counts of transportation to engage in prostitution, was too broadly interpreted to apply to Combs because, quote, there was insufficient evidence that Mr. Combs transported anyone with the intent to engage in prostitution, even if it includes sex for money. Okay.
But you were convicted of that by a jury of your peers.
And then yesterday the word came out that the president is considering pardoning Sean Diddy Combs.
When we get back, did you hear 25 people had to go to the hospital after turbulence on a flight from Salt Lake City?
We must talk about this.
This was not put your seatbelt on, somebody has some bumps and bruises. 25 people were hospitalized.
We'll bring you that right after the ADD word of the day.
Oh, it's your word of the day today, Dana.
It's my word of the day.
Oh, is it yours?
Am's word.
Oh, I thought it was hers.
The anti-dum-dum word of the day.
Can't wait. That's coming up next here on Dana and Parks. First test is tomorrow at 4:45 to see who remembers the ADD word of the day's definition. And so if you're new to the show or you don't normally tune in at this hour, we've started doing it at 4:30. The ADD, anti-dum-dum, word of the day, where we give you a word. It's an English word and its definition. It is a word that you have never heard of before.
Probably you've never heard of.
Unless you're George Will, who knows every word.
No, we got the idea.
Dan Weinbaum.
Sam, there was some study that showed the average American doesn't have that many words in their toolkit.
It's 40,000.
We are losing our vocabulary because of technology, and now with AI, it's happening at an even more rapid pace.
There are more than a million words in the English language, and the average American only uses 40,000.
Yeah, it's bad.
Okay. Sam, you're up. What is it?
Bombinate.
Excuse me?
Bombinate. B-O-M-B-I-N-A-T-E. Bombinate.
Is it a verb?
Almost.
Bombinate.
Can I get the origin, please? Okay, what does it mean?
Means to walk off a bridge.
No.
Okay.
It means to hum.
To walk out of a bathroom.
What'd you do in there? Oh, I abominated it. That thing's been abominated.
To create a humming or buzzing sound.
That's abominating?
It is a more poetic or technical term than just saying humming or buzzing.
Right.
You are bombinating.
Okay, so let me use it in a sentence, please, if I may. We have an air filter in the ceiling that is currently bombinating. And it is more of a bzzz when the air conditioner...
humming or buzzing.
It comes on. The filter is just flapping just enough that it does create this...
is it frittering?
Bizarre frittering buzz. Huh. And I shall, from this moment forth, call it abomination.
It is abomination.
It is abomination, Sam.
To bombinate is from the term bombonare, which shares the exact same meaning.
Of course.
It is a Latin term that is derived from the Greek word bombos, meaning a deep, hollow sound or hum slash buzz. And the Greek term is believed to be imitative origin, mimicking the sound that it describes.
I wonder if our musicians bombinate. Have bombinated, if you are in the percussion.
Well, I happen to be a drummer.
I know. Have you ever heard of the... is there a bombination in percussion? I mean, that would be a Busby
I'm
question.
Totally unaware of that.
Okay.
Bombinate.
Bombinate. Bombinate. Right. And then tomorrow we will have our quiz that we will abjectly fail.
We'll certainly do that at 4:45. Okay.
Okay, what in the Sam Hill happened on the Delta flight out of Salt Lake?
And I thought about this as I was driving in, and there is something I'm going to share that is not in this story, but I heard an interview with one of the passengers. I'll tell you about that in just a second. Oh, my word. Is it me, or are there more of these turbulent stories in the news lately than there has been in our entire career?
It's the jet stream disruption. They know
Is this climate change related in some way?
Jet stream disruption related. Okay. Yes.
There was a Delta Airlines flight that was originated in Salt Lake City. It was going to go to Amsterdam. It did not. It went to Minneapolis.
Okay.
They had to put that thing down. The turbulence was so bad. They describe it as, quote, significant turbulence that occurred yesterday. 25 people were taken to the hospital. The last report that I heard right before we went on the air said that 9 people have been released.
Only 25?
But that 16 others remain in the hospital, and they were unsure if some of those people have life-threatening injuries.
Oh, my God.
The turbulence was that bad.
Now, all 7 crew members were taken to the hospital. They have been released. Does it show on the radar, Scott, how far that sucker dropped? Was this one of those clear air turbulence? You know, you can look on that radar tracker. Okay.
So it says here, the plane encountered turbulence shortly after reaching 37,000 feet, briefly climbing to about 38,000 feet, and then descended to 35,000 feet.
A passenger on the flight who asked to remain anonymous told the local news station that the Airbus A330 made a sudden drop just as flight attendants were in the aisle with serving carts. It sent the carts and the flight attendants into
the ceiling.
Quoting here, every one of them flew and hit the ceiling. The beverage carts also flew into the air. Any items that were loose in the cabin got thrown everywhere. The plane is covered in liquids and service items. So that hot coffee, I bet.
It did a fast descent of roughly 2,500 feet, which is a huge drop.
The pilot told them on the third drop, the plane plunged 1,000 feet.
One man, and I'm going to have to take him at his word, okay? And by the way, everybody who hit the ceiling, and there were more than 2 dozen, none of them were wearing seatbelts.
Obviously, yes.
When I get on a plane now, if I don't have to unbuckle that seatbelt to go to the restroom or something, I stay buckled in from takeoff
the entire time
to take down.
One of the passengers said, from now on, when I am not up to go to the bathroom, I will be in my seat with my seatbelt on. You learned that lesson today real fast.
So there, and again, I'm going to have to take him at his word, but there was one passenger who was not buckled in, who was obviously injured. He was one of the 9, I believe, who had been released from the hospital. He said that he was stuck on the ceiling of that plane for what he felt was 30 seconds.
No. Okay.
Like I said, Sam, I'm going to have to take him at his word.
By the way, Delta said, this story from Fox 13, Salt Lake City, Delta said that all 7 crew members who were taken to the hospital have been released, as well as the 18 passengers.
They've all been released.
According to this story from Fox
13. Well, that's good news.
This was 2 hours into its scheduled 8-hour journey. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, that's right about the time that they're getting the car. I wonder with all of the jet stream disturbances that we are seeing, if the day of the drink cart with the hot coffee, and I wonder if that's coming to an end, Scott.
So what I've noticed on flights of late, and I've been on 2 flights this year, one to Cancun and one to California, and I distinctly remember this on the trip to San Francisco. I never saw the cart. They come around with a piece of paper.
Right.
And they ask you what you want to drink.
Yes.
And then, you know, I just said, I'll take a Sprite or a water. I can't remember what I asked.
They write it all down and bring them back one at a time.
They basically bring it out 6 at a time, the row across from you and your row.
Do you think that's why?
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised. I mean, that cart could kill you.
Now, is this happening more frequently, or are we just talking about it more because of all of the airplane disasters and near misses and
I think you're answering your own question. The fact that there have been so many issues with, you know, near misses or near collisions and, you know, the situation in January at Reagan National Airport, and how many stories have we reported where there was a near collision in the last 12 months?
Yep.
But when we first talked about it, we found out that, like, thousands of these happen a year. They just don't go reported. They're reported to the NTSB and to the FAA, but they don't make news stories. And so is there just an increased focus on it because of what happened in January? Is my question.
Sam, the answer to that, I don't know.
Yeah.
But I'm telling you, and I know that this is a fraction of a fraction of all the flights, you know, I mean.
But how many times have we been talking about clear air turbulence? Is that what it's called? We're just down
you're,
it goes.
You're close.
And it's usually
it's clear air turbulence.
It's usually at 30,000 feet. The pilots have no idea or no way of knowing it's coming. But they are just at cruising altitude, and then all of a sudden, boom, that thing falls.
You say that. I think we've only talked about it like 3 times in the last 2 years.
Keep your seatbelts on, people.
But how many flights are there? How many flights take off in the United States every day?
Oh, my God.
Is it 10,000? Oh,
thousands more and thousands that. And thousands.
Is it more?
Yes.
And you have one that occurs yesterday, you know, over the Midwest, and they have to put the plane down in Minneapolis. But it still, I still don't ever take my seatbelt off on a plane.
Averaging 46,000 flights a day.
What about, like, large commercial flights? That's what I'm getting at. Not, you know, my daughter is practicing at the Warrensburg Airport for her degree. How many commercial air flights are there per day?
This says there are approximately 100,000 worldwide per day. The FAA, for example, manages around 45,000 flights daily.
Okay. But that would include small planes and private jets, et cetera, would be my guess. I can't imagine there's 40,000 commercial flights a day for the number of people that we have in this country. If you missed the news, we've been reporting last couple of days about this double murder of a husband and wife down in Arkansas at Devil's Den National Park. They have arrested a suspect. We reported this at the beginning of the show. His name is James McGann. He's 28 years old. He moved to Springdale, Arkansas not too long ago to be a teacher at a public school in Springdale. He never, ever taught. You know, it's summer. But he left from Oklahoma to the teaching job in Springdale, Arkansas. He is accused of stabbing to death 43-year-old Clinton Brink and his 41-year-old wife, Kristen, in front of their 7 and 9-year-old daughters.
Awful. It is so awful. And Scott, they have now, well, she self-identified the woman at the barbershop cutting his hair. She said on social, so I'm cutting a guy's hair and I'm shaking. Now there's cops, there's detectives. Told them I haven't swept up the hair in case they need it. And they 100% said they did need the hair. Y'all, I'm shaking mostly because it's starting to look like this could be the man they are looking for. And there's video of all these officers there.
He was arrested just before 5 o'clock at that barbershop.
No idea on motive at all.
No.
Why? Not that there's anything you could say where it'd be like, oh, okay, yeah, that. There has to be something else here.
What it is, I don't know. James McGann, 28 years old, he has been arrested. He was hired to teach in the Springdale Public School District for the upcoming school year. He had not yet begun his employment, according to the superintendent, Jared Cleveland. Says Mr. Cleveland, this individual has not at any time come into contact with students or the families we serve. All right. If he's guilty, burn in hell. 913-586-7798, 586-7798, here on Dana and Parks.
Someone has suggested, and who even knows what was going on with this madman? Someone has suggested, with his history bouncing around from elementary school to elementary school, that was this homicidal maniac in Arkansas there to abduct a child? That everyone is focusing on what happened to mom and dad, and we should. That's important. That, my God, it's horrifying what happened to the mom and dad. But maybe the mom and dad died protecting the girls, and it was the two little girls he was after. That's the first theory I've heard that... Huh. I mean, clearly he's a homicidal crazy maniac, but the Post is reporting today that the dad got into a struggle with him and told mom and the girls run.
Huh.
And then the dad was killed. The mom got the girls to some safe distance away, then turned around to help dad and was killed. And then this guy ran. By the grace of God, the girls are not physically harmed.
If that is what really happened, where mom gets the girls away and then goes back to help her husband, I hate to say this, but I almost wish she hadn't. I applaud her for her bravery, but now those two kids are growing up with neither parent.
And, by the way, ABC News says that the suspect has already admitted to police, allegedly, that he committed the homicide.
Who's reporting that?
ABC News.
Hmm.
My God.
For what benefit? I mean, unless, to take Dana's theory, unless you're doing it to satisfy some sick, perverted fantasy with young children, weirdo, pedo, allegedly, what would be the motive?
They also said that the suspect sustained cuts on his hands during the struggle with the victims. According to law enforcement, DNA from the blood recovered from the crime scene matched McGann's.
So they've got him dead to rights. All right. And can somebody explain to me, there are three different mugshots that I've seen today.
I know.
In one, excuse me, I'm suffering from a minor head cold. In one, he's got shaggy, longer hair, especially his bangs are longer. In another mugshot that I've seen, and by the way, he's got the largest nostrils I've ever seen on a human being. In another one, his hair is shorter and the bangs are curly.
The blue background is a driver's license photo.
Got it. Okay. Now, why was the woman in the barbershop shaking before police showed up?
She said as they showed up, she said, now I'm shaking. I think this might be the guy.
Oh, God.
She gave him half a haircut, and then police descended into the barbershop and took him out. How is he a teacher? My God.
You got a teaching certificate? There are crazies in every profession.
The prior school year, he was employed at an elementary school in Flower Mound, Texas. The Louisville Independent School District confirmed he was placed on administrative leave in the spring of 2023 following concerns related to classroom management, professional judgment, and student favoritism. He ultimately resigned.
And is this not something that the school district can report so that the next school district that goes...
That he was creepy?
Yeah.
When he was hired to his fifth grade teacher role in Broken Arrows, he passed all background checks.
Okay.
Maybe it doesn't get reported because he resigned and the investigation was never completed.
All right. We have Festivus Friday coming your way tomorrow. It'll start right about now, right at the 5 o'clock hour tomorrow afternoon. Festivus Friday, the airing of the grievances. And it is brought to you by Q39. Go to their website, Q39KC.com. Dan Weinbaum has the news coming your way in 2 minutes. She is Dana Wright. He is Sam Stevie III. My name is Scott Parks. Here on KMBZ, we will see you on the other side of the news.
Thanks for listening to the Dana and Parks podcast. Remember, you can catch us online anytime at KMBZ.com.